Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 223 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. The Rohit Sharma-led Team India enjoyed a superb outing in the Asia Cup. Apart from a narrow 6-run defeat against Bangladesh, the Indian unit provided a commanding display for all of us to see. Australia, on the other hand, head into the series after a 3-2 drubbing against South Africa. Now, this series that features India and Australia is a crucial one, as the winner not just reclaims the number one rankings in ODIs, but it also gives both the teams the perfect opportunity to test themselves ahead of the Men's ODI World Cup. In today's episode, we have someone who has already shared his views on fantasy apps and the legality of the same in episode 210. This time, we are pivoting to a team he supports. I welcome back Neeraj, who is a keen supporter of Australia and who's happy to be back on the podcast to share his thoughts and insights on what we can expect from this series. Without further ado, let's get started. Hi Neeraj, welcome back to Never on the Back Foot podcast. I know this is in the middle of exams for you, but really looking forward to this discussion.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back on the podcast, you know, somewhat of a recurring guest, if you will. And I'm hoping to leave something from my end with the listeners.
And, you know, considering our topic is quite interesting because, you know, you are an Aussie fan as well. And now, you know, India is squaring off against your favorite team. So we'll definitely have a lot of talking points. And, you know, this series is something a lot of us are looking forward to. So to just kickstart our discussion, let's start with India. Okay. So how would you assess India's Asia Cup campaign? Now, you know, winning the 8th time is obviously, you know, coming off a big morale booster as well. So how would you look at that?
I'd say that the Asia Cup this time out, I think they have, you know, gotten their mojo back. They've understood their roles and they're working coherently. Like if you see in the finals, somehow they bundled out Sri Lanka, who I would argue were the most superior team out of all the teams that participated in the Asia Cup for a mere 50 runs. So in that sense, they're getting their mojo back and they're trying to find solutions to the questions that they have. Even though they have a few decisions that I do not agree with, mostly revolving around Sanju Samson, but still, they are getting their that groove back.
Absolutely. And, you know, through further discussion pointers as well, you know, we will cover this aspect. Now, I think India's announcement for this the squad for the series is quite interesting, right? Like there's a squad for the first two ODIs and then one for the third one. So now for these first two ODIs, we have KL Rahul, who will be leading this Indian unit. So what are your thoughts on, you know, KL Rahul, the skipper, and the kind of approach he brings to the table?
KL Rahul, he's a very specific niche of a captain, I would say. I would say it is more of an optimizer. Let me give an example. So in the 2020 season of IPL, one match stood out in my head, which was a match between Kings XI Punjab, now Punjab Kings, unfortunately, and Mumbai Indians. The match almost got pulled to the end, and then it went to a super over, and then it went to another super over. And eventually, the Kings XI did win. I would say that he's a captain who knows how to get resources spread out thin. But he also has his own very specific issues. Like, he has no clue to do what to do with spinners at times. Like, this happened in Kings XI and in Lucknow as well. Like, he brings in a spinner for two overs and then forgets that spinner for the rest of the overs and gets someone else in. It's honestly a bit of a mixed bag with KL Rahul at this point, but he knows the basics and he's got some firm ground to stand on this time out, I would say.
Fair enough. And it will be interesting to see how he, you know, fares in his captaincy stint as well. Now, when you look at the squads, you know, you see Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli, even the likes of Hardik Pandya and Kuldeep Yadav who have been rested for these first two matches. Now, this is before they obviously return for that final encounter. So what do you see is the rationale or the logic, you know? And did you make sense of this move that, you know, having two separate squads for like the first two ODIs and the last one and resting these senior pros?
I don't see the logic. I rather say it's a short-sighted move from the management, because these are your key players and some of the players have, you know, really potent opportunities coming in the World Cup, you know, and sidelining them and not giving them enough game time is somewhat of a misuse of the resources that they have, I would say, because they are your star batters and they are your frontline bowlers who are going to be bowling in the World Cup. And if they don't get enough game time and prep time, what do you have in the World Cup? So I don't agree with the decisions they took with regards to resting a few players and then bringing them back in the third ODI. It's like cooling a piece of iron and then all of a sudden introducing it to high heat. I don't agree with that move, but it is BCL. They'll find a way somehow. So
agreed. Even I have not been able to come to terms with what is the rationale behind this move. Although Ajit Agarkar did try to explain it in that press conference. And quite funnily, you know, there was this whole conspiracy theory of a Mumbai lobby that's, you know, stopping Virat Kohli from featuring in matches because there's this whole concern that he might break Sachin Tendulkar's record. And that's the reason why he's being rested. So what are your two cents on this wild theory and how did you react when you first heard it?
I am the last person who believes in lobbies, to be very honest. This lobby talk has been there since the start of the IPL, if you're being honest. So during the 2011-13 period, you know, there was infamous Chennai lobby with N. Srinivas and MS Dhoni and with players like Ravi Ashwin and Ravindra Jadeja, Murali Vijay. They're all getting constant chances. So this is obviously a play of the CSK lobby. And then when Virat Kohli came in, there was this talk about the RCB lobby, you know, Siraj getting so many chances, even though he wasn't bowling at his best like he is right now. And now with the whole conversation around the Mumbai lobby, it doesn't make any sense to me. If a player plays well, and if they have the rationale and they fit into the plan, they obviously will get the chance. So this whole lobby conversation kind of makes me uncomfortable in a sense, because if you take any other team, they don't go around saying that, for example, even taking Australia as a frame of reference, they don't go around saying the Victorian lobby, you know, with players from Victoria, like Glenn Maxwell, you know, getting all these opportunities, you know, not doing well. Or New South Wales lobby, you know, with Steve Smith doing nothing and then he's getting so many opportunities. T20Is, they don't do that. They understand that they select players on based off form and with the rationale or that they present a team. Whereas in India, unfortunately, this concept of lobbies due to keep it a little bit more diplomatic due to political beliefs, I would say. So, whole in whole, I would say this whole concept of lobbies is weird to me.
Fair enough. And this was, I think, published in like a very reputed news portal, which was eventually taken down. But still, you know, this conspiracy theory is very much live and existing on X, so that's on those fans who still want to continue discussing on that. And taking our discussion forward now, you know, there's this whole suspense over Akshar Patel's fitness, you know, and he's been named in the third and the final ODI as well, and Ajit Agarkar, you know, hoped that the all-rounder would be fit till then. So what do you make of it? Like, we understand that Akshar Patel is an important you know, cog in that wheel, but too much dependence on his fitness, and are they not looking at other options somewhere?
I'd say that they're banking on Akshar to do well, and he seems like someone that fit in their reference and rationale for what their World Cup team will look like, and having him suffer through that injury is not good news for their plan. So they're banking on him to, you know, come through and stay fit for the World Cup, but there are other options as well, you know, with Ravi Ashwin coming into the frame of picture now, and Washington Sundar and left field choice, but I think Krunal Pandya or Shahbaz Ahmed maybe as a last minute replacement. Not again, it's the World Cup and it's at home, so they will put all their resources into getting Akshar Patel back on field, but a left field choice may make or break the difference for India this time out. So that's my take.
Okay, that does make sense. And even when you look at the other selections, right now, Ruturaj Gaikwad, Washington Sundar, and Tilak Varma have been named, you know, for these first two ODIs. But like Ruturaj Gaikwad will also be leading India in the Asian Games in China. So what do you make of this move, including him? And will it not get too hectic with the travel and all that?
It's the BCCI. I think they'll figure out an answer for this. They've always been known for moves like this, you know, getting the players in and out, running on a boot. So, yeah. And also, I think he's a high-octane player, so rest is a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he can keep up with the pace that they're pushing him across in. So, only time will tell.
Yeah, but again, fair enough. It will be interesting to see how he manages this workload. And Ravi Ashwin is another name, you know, who returns to this ODI setup and will, you know, apparently be with the team for all the three encounters. So what was the reason for this inclusion? Because his the way he's picked, like, in white ball is very sporadic, right? So he's picked, then he's dropped, and it's just been a very weird sequence of events. So what do you think could be the reason for his inclusion? Are they looking at more alternatives, or anytime an ICC event comes, they're like, hey, let's pick Ashwin. What do you see?
Left-handers. Only response is left-handers. They want mm-hmm. someone who has a knack of taking wickets against left-handers. So if you look at the Australian team right now, there's David Warner. There's Alex Carey, and there's also, you know, Mitchell Stark, who could obviously bat well, who isn't a batting all-rounder per se, but also swings the bat often. So in that sense, they're trying to tackle the left-hander challenge. So therefore, they're bringing in Ashwin, you know, to tackle that part of the equation. And also, they need a defensive bowler, a bowler who will be more enforcing by nature, you know, as a wall, just so that the other bowlers could take over. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's the rationale behind bringing Ashwin in. However, I don't get the logic behind, you know, the on and off switch type of operation with Ashwin. Like, you see him in one series and then he disappears for three more series
mm-hmm.
and then he comes back in another series. It almost confuses him. Like, there has to be some sort of structure in the way Ashwin plays, because he's at the very end of his career. If you keep alternating him between formats and between balls, you know, he's a red ball bowler. I at least believe he's a red ball bowler mm-hmm. in my head. So, you know, pushing him around like this doesn't exactly gel well for his rationale. At least I'd like to believe that. And also, it kind of causes a disharmony, because now you have to figure out who has to go out for him to come back. So,
mm-hmm.
it's a bit of a mixed bag.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, you have Ravindra Jadeja and Washington Sundar, right? They are also part of the spin attack for the first two ODIs. So how are they going to figure out which combination is going to work well? And thoughts on their inclusion?
So I think the World Cup combination, at least in my head, I would like to believe the World Cup combination will be Jadeja, Aksar and Kuldeep.
Yeah.
If Aksar goes missing, then it will be the Jadeja, Ashwin and Kuldeep. So that will be the form, the trio that they're going to be pushing the World Cup with.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask that, do you somewhere see Washington Sundar being included? Because he also brings in that extra batting option. And you won't think it will be a Washington versus Ashwin type of situation?
I'd say they go with Washington. They wouldn't go with Washington, to be very honest with you, because
okay.
if you saw in the recent TNPL as well, Tamil Nadu Premier League, he went wicketless for about 8 matches.
Yeah,
I'm not disputing his talent. He has immense talent. He was part of the GABA team that eventually won. I wasn't feeling very good that day, but still they won. So he was part of that team. And he also has a rather good record against Australia. And he knows the basics. And I would say, I would base Washington to Sundar against other players within the Indian Exodus talent right now. But he's not in the good best of forms, and introducing him against a high octane opponent, someone that you'll be facing in the first ever match of the World Cup this year. No, I won't do that. I won't take that risk personally.
Makes sense. And now, you know, focusing on the batting, you have Shreyas Iyer, Ishan Kishan, Suryakumar Yadav and Tilak Verma, you know, who form a solid batting core, at least for these first two ODIs. What are your thoughts on this combination?
For me, only, I don't want to point fingers, but I feel like the Mumbai lobby groomer core will have some base with regards to this. Because Ishan Kishan, Suryakumar Yadav and Tilak Verma, does that not feel like a pattern emerging?
Yeah.
So I don't exactly feel very good about it, because Tilak Verma, he is the future. Make no mistake, he's the future. But I would like for him to sit aside for a while and give some chances. Sanju Samson. Sanju Samson has had, like, I don't know, 30 odd matches. Let's keep it at that. And he averages 57. And yet they almost don't give him any matches at this point. He's not even in the Asia Games squad.
Yeah.
So I don't see the logic behind keeping the likes of Suryakumar Yadav, who's given so many chances, and yet he averages somewhere around 27. And also against Australia, the first three ODIs, he scored a diamond duck. So what is the rationale going on right now with the middle order, especially, you know, for these ODIs? Because more than a few of these players are going to go to the World Cup, right? You need to keep them as prepped as possible. So you need to bring your best foot forward. Will they put the best foot forward? We don't know. We'll only know on 22nd and further. So I don't exactly agree with the middle order or like the batting firepower being at full flow, because one of their best assets is sitting somewhere in Kerala right now. So I don't exactly like that part of it.
Glad you brought this point up, you know, of Sanju Samson, because he's someone who really brings a lot of value to the team, and his exclusion has irked a lot of fans as well. And on the same line of thought, you have someone like a Prithvi Shaw too, who seems to have been overlooked yet again from all the squads. So how do you look at this playing out, and what more can they do?
So I've already talked about Samson, so I'm going to switch gears and go with Shaw for a bit. Shaw, I would say that excluding him in a similar way that Vinod Kambli got excluded, it's a deep, complex issue, but I think it's more to do with his off-field antics. His off-field antics, and, you know, him getting rolled up in all the controversies. If I'm not mistaken, recently he got caught up with, you know, assaulting a fan for recording him. So off-field, his record off-field has not helped him implement his best foot on-field. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. And also, fitness may also come into the play, because even though he's rather young, he needs to stay fit to play all three matches. So Shaw is a very interesting case. When the big rigs, like, you know, I hope this doesn't happen at the end of the World Cup, but Rohit Sharma or Virat Kohli retires, maybe then he may fit into the frame of mind of the selectors, you know, and, you know, bringing him into the squad. But Shaw, I would say, is a very interesting case, and he has time. Sanju Samson still is a very, very unfair case in my head, because he's averaging 57. He's got the talent. He almost carried a game against South Africa to the line and almost won the game for India. And yet he's not getting a chance right now. Even if it wasn't for the Australian ODI series, I wouldn't mind that. Not even for Asian games. And even in Asia Cup, he was very much a reserve player, and he wasn't even on field to, you know, give water at least. So I don't get this treatment of Sanju Samson specifically. But it's BCL, so we can't really say anything at this point.
And looking at another player who has been excluded, which has caused a lot of heartbreak, is Umran Malik, right? Now, he's had a very forgettable IPL 2023. And he has not done much in India colours also so far. But, you know, his non-exclusion from the Asian Games squad, he's not even here. And even Deepak Chahar, for that matter, didn't get a go, right? So what did you make of like these exclusions, and again, what more should they do?
Deepak Chahar is a glass cannon. Let's get that right.
Okay.
He plays for 5 matches, somehow managed to get himself injured for the next 10, and it goes disappearing for the next few months, and somehow comes back. I would say he has to work a lot on his fitness, and more specifically his reliability. How reliable can he be for India? Because it's not like as if he's out of the frame of the team's base, but he has to keep himself fit enough to, you know, get back into the match cycle. Coming to Umran Malik, he provides an X factor. Let's be honest, he's the fastest bowler we've had in probably 2-3 decades at this point. So he has the pace with him. However, his lines and lengths are very wavy, if you're being honest, because at that pace that he's bowling, 145 plus, at sometimes 150, it's very easy to keep your bat and just get a nick or hit for 4s and 6s. It's very easy. He's very, very volatile in that sense. You know, I would liken him to someone like a Brett Lee from Australia. So Brett Lee, for a very long part of his career, he had a tendency to go for a lot of runs. I think at the nip end of his career, he had a tendency to get hit. Because I remember this World Cup match, West Indies versus Australia. This was in 2009. So I think that was his reintroduction to the team somehow. And he got pummeled by Chris Gayle. So bowlers who bowl 140, 145 plus are always going to be very high risk. So if he can get his line a little bit more tighter and he can nail the length that they're asking him to bowl, he's sure a bowler that to watch for the next few years. However, in this current stage, I wouldn't have him near the team. I would like him to work on those aspects.
Fair enough. And I think that's where, you know, the coaches come into perspective of how they groom him, and, you know, hope he's being given some time to, you know, work on those skills, and he's being communicated with that, you know, this is what you're lacking and that's where you're being sidelined. And this also, you know, brings me to UC Chahal, right? Now, he has also not been included. So what do you think is the reasoning and mindset? Because I tried to understand why he was not selected. Is it because of him not getting his line and length right, or, you know, not being able to get those wickets in the middle over? Is he being too defensive? So how do you put this in perspective?
Predictable lines. And also, if we're talking about the Australian series in mind, Glenn Maxwell has an awfully good record against UC Chahal. I remember this. This was in the 2019 series, so the T20I series. Glenn Maxwell beat the lights out of UC Chahal, and also in the ODI matches. So this was in Mohali. He came in within a few balls of facing Chahal. He hit him for 2 long sixes. So that's the factor that's holding him back, because his lines get very predictable after a few more overs. Like, the first few overs, you're not able to figure out where he's bowling. The once you get into the frame of mind on where he's bowling, it becomes very easy to play out. You can go full down against him and still get something out of it. And it's honestly a problem with Chahal that he's not able to vary his line a lot. So that's what I feel like. He needs to get a little bit more variations in his assets, if I were to comment on it.
Right. That actually does make sense. And now, you know, looking at the pace attack that has been assimilated for these first two ODIs, you have Shardul Thakur, Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Siraj, Mohammad Shami and Prasidh Krishna. So what do you think is the combination that India would want to opt for going ahead?
So a combination, I would say Jasprit Bumrah, Mohammad Siraj, Mohammad Shami and Prasidh Krishna. A 4-pronged pace attack. If they are going on a green seeming wicket, these would be my 4. If they are going on a more dead wicket or a more turning wicket, like say Chennai for example, I would probably do a bit of a mix with Shardul Thakur or Prasidh Krishna. The rationale is that Jasprit Bumrah is an X-factor bowler. He's going to take you wickets any given day. He is that capable. Siraj, more recency bias, I would say. He has the ability to move the ball around in the early overs. Shami can do the same, moving off the ball, but at a steeper pace. Prasad Krishna can nail your lines at the dead, as we've seen in the IPL, 2022 IPL. So he's capable of that. So I would put these four bowlers ahead.
Right, that does make sense. And, you know, before we move on to Australia, what do you think are some of the areas that India would want to figure out in this series and perhaps work around?
Finding a good middle order, for starters, because their middle order seems very muddled. So, in the ODI setup, they've at least in the past 2 years or so, their middle order has been very wavering. And with the unfortunate missing of Rishabh Pant, that's gotten worse somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say this series would help them figure out what their middle order is going to look like and also what their bowling, mainly the spin attack, will look like, because the spin attack and middle order is what can make or break India's chances this World Cup. So I would say these are two things that they have in mind coming to this World Cup, of this series.
Right. And now, you know, just shifting our gears to Australia. Now, Australia has announced an 18-member squad for this ODI series. I haven't done anything quirky like India, you know, for the first two ODIs, there's one squad, and for the last one, there's one. So what are your initial impressions of the squad?
Actually, this seems like a very firm squad to what you'll see during the World Cup. So I feel happy going in with the squad. So yeah, satisfied is what I would put it across as.
Right. And now Australia has obviously been bolstered, you know, by the return of several important players. You have skipper Pat Cummins, who's coming back. So how happy are you that, you know, he's back in the setup leading the team?
I would say it's a good thing that he's coming back. How game fit he will be going into this World Cup is up in the air, because it's been a while since he played. The last games he played were in the Ashes. So we'll have to wait and see how he goes on. But yeah, I'm happy that he's back. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, and even when you look at Australia now, they were without the services of many of the usual players during that White Ball tour of South Africa, as, you know, they recovered from injuries sustained during that very difficult Ashes series. And in the South Africa series, they lost 3-2, right? So how would you look at that series and any takeaways?
That series was probably an eye-opener for Australia, because going into the series, they were very confident with what they had. But now they will understand that they are not invincible in a sense. So they have mean flaws are their middle order, because it's a very raw middle order in my eyes, at least, with Alex Carey, Matt Short, and not Matt Short, Alex Carey, Cameron Green, Josh Inglis. That middle order is very fragile, and it was very much exposed during this series. And this very concerning usage of Tim David, I would say. Tim David, I would liken him to someone like a Surya Kumar Yadav. He makes a lot of sense in T20Is, but he doesn't really make a lot of sense in ODIs. So, yeah, the middle order is something I'm very concerned about. And another concern would be how the space attack would go on these kiddie and slow surfaces in India. So we've seen that they're capable. When, you know, at the start of the year, we had an India versus Australia series and they won, thankfully. So in that series, we saw that they had the chops to keep the ball rolling at a lower pace to get the wickets that they need. But how game ready will they be and how capable will they be moving ahead is somewhat of a mystery, right?
Right. And that does bring me to this question of, you know, how is Australia's batting shaping up? Now you see the likes of Warner, you know, he seems to be coming back to form. And even Manas Labuschagne has been in pristine form, right? Especially in that South Africa series, notching up some very important runs. So are you still feeling confident about the top order at least?
Yeah, top order, I would say I'm 80 to 90% confident of what they're capable. because they are very reputable players for starters, so I know that they'll get what they have to get.
Right. And now, you know, talking about the bowling as well, it seems formidable. You have the likes of Josh Hazlewood and Sean Abbott, you know, really shoring up that attack. So looking forward to go see them go all guns blazing.
Sean Abbott, I'm not so sure about because he's very volatile, but he's a very capable bowler. I've seen he in the past 12 to 18 months, he's changed himself as a bowler. And also in his batting repertoire. So I'm waiting for him to see what he's going to bring this time out.
And another observation, you know, during the South Africa series was Adam Zampa, right? Now, he had a tough outing in one of those ODIs going for like, what, 100 plus runs. Reckon he's still the best, you know, spin bowling option that Australia has and they will persist with him, right?
Yeah, definitely. He is the lead bowler for Australia as far as I'm concerned when it comes to spin department. So I'm pretty sure you're going to go ahead with it no matter what happens.
Right. And when you look at Australia's squad as well, there are a lot of like injury concerns. Now, Glenn Maxwell, who was initially a part of that South Africa tour, he aggravated his ankle, you know, while training. And then he eventually flew back home for the birth of his child. Now, I think it's a massive boost that he returns because he's been declared fit and will be a part of this India tour as well. So what are your thoughts on his presence in that team? And considering he has played in India, like, through the IPL and so many times with the Australian team as well. A big boost, right?
Very big boost. I would say that him being in the middle order bolsters Australia well because he's a glue or in that sense that he holds that middle order together. So yeah, I'm very confident that he's coming back.
Right. And even Cameron Green, now he missed those three ODIs against South Africa because he suffered that concussion in the first game. And he returned for the final ODI following that 8-day concussion protocol procedure. And now he's going to feature against India. We know the last time he squared off against India, what happened. Again, a massive boost.
True. I would say he's equally as important as Maxwell now because he's got IPL experience, most importantly, under his belt. So I'd say that he's one of the key players going into the series and in the World Cup.
Exactly. And the other duo, you know, that really caught my attention was Matt Short and Spencer Johnson, right? Now, we have seen a lot of them in the BBL and even in the domestic circuit. So can you talk more about this duo and what they bring to the table?
Matt Short is a very aggressive batter in a sense that he gives you the starts that he needs. We saw in Punjab Kings as well, you know, to bring it a more Indian-centric conversation, that he gives starts as quick as possible. So he's a good starter in that sense. How he carries it in a one-day format is still yet to be seen. I feel if we had to put personal opinions here, I feel like maybe if Matt Short wasn't the solution, they could have brought in someone like Ben McDermott, who has immense experience playing in the subcontinent. You know, he has scored 100 in Pakistan and he recently did well in the Lanka Premier League as well. So I wager saying that you can toss up between a Matt Short and a Ben McDermott. But Matt Short, he is capable and I'm happy that he's getting the opportunities he has. And he seems like someone who can bat long and for a very high amount of time. And also he brings in off-break bowling as well. So that's another spin option in the repertoire for Australia, which will come into play in the World Cup. And looking at Spencer Johnson. Spencer Johnson was one of the reasons why Brisbane Heat, you know, went into the finals. So I'm happy that he's, you know, getting to finally play for Australia after a long time. He seems like a very capable bowler, a bit like a Jofra Archer in a sense. I'm not going to liken him to Jofra Archer because there are two extremes in my eyes at least. But he's a bowler with a very simple action, but a lot of pace going into his arms. So I'm happy that he's coming.
Right. And the other notable inclusions have to be that of Tanvir Sangha and Nathan Ellis, right? Now, they have again been forces to reckon with in the BBL and in the domestic circuit as well. So, how do you feel they will fare in this series if given a chance, that is?
Tanvir Sangha might just be the Matt Kuhneman of this series. you know, in the first, so in the Australia series in early in the year, they were missing a bit of an X factor, I feel, in the bowling department. So the inclusion of Matt Cunnaman kind of answered that question and bolstered them a bit. Coming to Tanvir Sangar, I feel like he may just be the key this time out. I'm unsure as to how good his bowling will be because I haven't watched a lot of him because I'm a Hobart Hurricanes fan as well. So, competition. So, Tanvir Sangar, I feel like he can go well because it's a wicket that suits him at the end of the day. So, Tanvir Sangar, I'm confident. Nathan Ellis, I feel like, may just make a difference this time out because he'll very much like a Shardul Thakur in a sense. So he picks up wickets in bulk rather than wicket every over. He's someone who picks 3 wickets in 1 over kind of character. So Nathan Ellis, I'm very much confident having him in my squad. So yeah, that's that.
Right. And even focusing on now some of the more notable omissions, Travis Head, who's I think recovering from an injury, and even Ashton Agar. So will their absence be felt and how do you think Australia will navigate through that?
Ashton Agar and who exactly?
Travis Head.
Travis Head. I don't like the way they manage Travis Head, to be very honest with you. I feel like they overworked him and they paid the price. So he played the Ashes. He plays the South Africa series, the T20Is firstly, and then the One Dayers, and in the last match, before the last match, he managed to get himself injured into dumb. And he's your key asset for the World Cup. Why would you stretch his shelf life like that? I didn't like the treatment one bit. Coming to Ashton Agar, it's going to be tough without him. I feel like Tanvir Sangar might just cover that gap, but still, it would be immensely concerning that, you know, Ashton Agar is missing. He's a bit like Akshar Patel in that sense that he brings a lot with his bowling. So that's that.
Fair enough. And as we reach the end of our discussion as well, are there any key matchups that you are looking forward to in the series? And any final prediction?
I'm looking forward to how they would tackle the Indian batters. So mainly KL Rahul, Rohit Sharma would tackle the likes of Spencer Johnson and Mitchell Stark because a big issue that the Indian contingent has always had is facing left-arm pacers or left-arm bowling of any sort. So I'm looking forward to that matchup. And I'm also looking forward to the matchup of Steve Smith against Ravi Chandranashwin and the Indian spinners mostly because Steve Smith, even though he's got a not-so-nice record against Ashwin in tests, in ODIs, he's fared well against him. If you remember, in 2020, he had the 262 ball hundreds in Sydney. So I'm waiting for those two major comeback.
Right. And do you also have a prediction now for the series and how it's going to unfold?
I would wager and say since I'm an Australia fan, I'm just going to go all out and say 3-0. But that's a bit unrealistic. So I'm just going to say 2-1 Australia.
Okay, interesting. And do you have any final thoughts or a message for our listeners as we end this episode?
Not a lot of thoughts, actually, but stay responsible. Watch the game as much as you want. Consume responsibly and hope to see you soon then.
Absolutely. Fitting conclusion. And on that note, thank you so much, Neeraj, for joining me on the podcast, sharing those amazing insights and, you know, really bringing a different perspective. I'm sure, you know, this is one among the many collaborations we're going to do in the near future as well. So until next time, stay safe and take care. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning into this episode and for your unstinted support. Please follow and press the bell icon on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast on Google Podcasts for the latest episode updates and stay tuned. Do check out @NeverInTheBackFoot on Instagram and Threads and @NeverInTheBack1 on Twitter, now called X, for the latest facts, updates, fresh content and a lot more that's coming up this cricket season just for you. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Spotify for Podcasters, and many other platforms. So please do spread the word. Until next time, stay safe and take care, listeners. Bye for now.